The Loose Cannons Podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey, Taylor. How in the fuck you get here anyway? Hey, you look educated.
I volunteered for it.
You did what?
I volunteered. I dropped out of college and told him I wanted the infantry, combat, Vietnam.
You volunteered for this shit, man?
Believe that?
He was a crazy fucker. Giving up college?
Didn't make much sense. I wasn't learning anything. I figured why should just the poor kids go off to war and the rich kids always get away with it?
Oh, I see. What we got here is a crusader.
Sounds like it.
Shit. You gotta be rich in the first place to think like that.
Hey everyone, it's another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Yep, that's the sound of it coming for you.
That's it, it's coming for you.
Today we're continuing our discussion of AFI's top 100 films. We're going to be talking about 1986's Platoon, directed by Oliver Stone. But before we do that, let's do this. It's a little segment we like to call Heralds and Announcements. Do 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 do.
Patrick's in a good mood today.
I feel good. It's my day off.
Good energy.
He hasn't had any sleep, so it's kind of like he's drunk.
Watched a movie
drunk
about
on
Vietnam.
No sleep.
You know,
I've been off work for like 2 weeks
those
now.
Things you do when you're happy and you got no worries.
But that's
how's that working out?
That's been fantastic.
I'm going to herald a movie that was previously heralded by Mitchell on our End of the Year podcast called The Death of Louis XIV, directed by Albert Serra.
One of the best movies of the year.
Yeah, it was a fun little romp. Just, you know, watching an old monarch waste away, having his gangrenous leg kill him. Spoiler alert, Louis XIV died, by the way. But I liked this movie because... partially because, like, Mitchell already put in my brain the reading of, like, it being about the death of cinema, because here we have the man who played Antoine Doinel playing Louis XIV dying on a bed. And I was like, wow, that's a really fun metaphor to think about, like, the death of cinema, just sitting here, like, this slow, like... weirdly comic movie about someone dying of gangrene. Like, it's definitely the funniest movie that I've ever seen about someone dying of gangrene. But yeah, it does a great job of, like, being funny without feeling like it's trying too hard to be funny. Like, it does, like, really small funny things that are amplified by the fact that it's a very, very slow movie. So, like, you pick up on so much more of that humor and of the, like, weirdness of the whole world that's surrounding the character, and I really liked that. I also just kind of liked, you know, how Louis XIV reminded me of me when I'm not doing anything. Like, I'm depressed and I'm just laying in bed, and I'm just like, yep, this is kind of how it feels.
Bring me my dogs.
Only my dogs can make me happy. Let me look at my birds.
I'm gonna denounce Iron Man, who sucks. I hadn't seen it since the theaters, which is somewhat astonishing to me that that was a decade ago, but.
Yeah.
Here we are, a decade later. I didn't end up finishing it. As anyone who's read my Letterboxd review will know, I tried many times, and each time I watched less and less of the movie. And I was like, this is never going to get done. Like, I'm never going to be able to finish it.
If you continued that progression, at some point, you'd have been able to, like, watch it without watching it. Like, you just watch such an insignificant amount of time of that movie that it wouldn't be able to
a
be...
A frame, half a frame.
Yes.
Yeah. I was very upset that the Letterboxd community was so astute that they were able to make the math joke that I wanted to make before I got there.
It was the joke I was making
yeah.
in my review. But, yeah, I mean, the people talk about, like, the opening of the movie as the best part of the movie, and it is not. Like, the first, like, 30 minutes is, like, pretty terrible. It's, like, basically Tony Stark made, you know, billions of dollars making weapons and then almost gets killed by his own weapons and is like, oh, this is bad. I've been selling these weapons and now they almost killed me. You know what I better do? Make a super weapon that only I control. That'll fix it. They'll never fall into the wrong hands if they're only in my hands. And yeah, I mean, like, it makes Iron Man a pretty, like, terrible character. Like, I think that he's very gross. Like, he's just, like, making crass jokes all the time. And I'm pretty sure we're supposed to find him funny. But I'm like, no. Like, Tony Stark is a monster. Like his narcissism that's supposed to be, like, oh, this is, like, kind of his, you know, like, double-edged sword. Like, he's, like, rakish and charming, but he's also, like, self-obsessed and whatever. But I'm like, no, he's none of those things. He's just, like, a sociopath. Like, he's an asshole. I don't like this guy one bit, and I want him to go away. I wish Jeff Bridges had killed him. That'd be cool. Like, and it's weird to, like, think of, like, the greater good. Like they're, like, fighting each other, and what Jeff Bridges wants to do is, like, no, Stark Industries is all about, like, making weapons. Like, what are you talking about, Tony? We're not going to stop making weapons. And then Tony's like, no, we are going to stop making weapons, except for my Iron Man suit. And I was like, this is not two sides. Like, this is not an argument. Like, it's just two different ways to make weapons. Like, that's not a...
This is just about corporate takeover. It's not a compelling moral. This isn't about...
So, yeah. And, Terrence Howard looks like he really doesn't want to be in the movie, so I guess I get why Jon Favreau, like, didn't like him and didn't want him back. But, like, there's, like, a weird part where Tony Stark makes, like, a joke about, like, a really homophobic joke about, you know, like, some kind of, like, sex workers or something like that, and when they were all, like, in some other country together. And the way that Terrence Howard is like, don't say that, man. Like, it feels like Terrence Howard saying it. And I was like, this is really weird. It was like,
Terrence Howard's like, fuck this movie.
Actually, like, it made me feel like maybe Terrence Howard is actually homophobic because it felt too real. I was like, his masculinity is genuinely threatened in this moment. And that feels very strange to watch.
Wow, weird.
Yeah.
I've gotten that impression from Terrence Howard in interviews in the past, so.
Yeah.
Checks out.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I mean, like, it's supposed to be played for laughs, but then his response is, like, so straight that it doesn't, like, heighten the comedy. It, like, just, like, makes it drop dead. And I was like, whoa, that was a weird response. Like, it feels like Favreau would have been like, no, like, you're kind of the butt of this joke. Like, you're embarrassed or whatever. You should play it up a little bit. But instead he's like, nah, man, don't say that.
And I guess they were like, okay, fine. This works too.
But, yeah, I mean, Jon Favreau only agreed to come back for Iron Man 2 if he could replace Terrence Howard. That was, like, one of his conditions. So it was not a good working relationship at all.
Right. Yeah. I rewatched Dog Day Afternoon, and that movie is still awesome. We've already canonized it, so not going to say too much about it, except that it's...
You canonized it.
On this rewatch, it was more apparent to me how the crowd is used in this movie. and how weirdly, like, in the end, it feels like a bit, it feels like a performative way of politics, like, without any actual politics. Like, there's just a lot of yelling and a lot of screaming. And while Sonny manages to use that crowd in the beginning to, like, bring the police kind of out of whack and establish himself as a person that's, like, making the demands and whatever, later on, the more the movie progresses, it's the noise and everything gets just so much wilder and weirder and not really possible to, like, even catalyze it into anything other than, like, a big mess. And
the FBI doesn't really care.
FBI don't give a fuck. No. Yeah.
As soon as the FBI
about that human protest,
he can't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. So in my Letterboxd review, I called it the movie that predicted the internet and or Twitter. So I think, that was the background on that. But really, nice. Really great movie and really cool Pacino performance. So pretty and so sweaty.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm excited to rewatch it since I still haven't seen it in like almost half my life at this point.
Mm.
I think I was 18 when I watched it. I'm gonna be 35 soon.
Nice.
I will denounce the other movie that Patrick and I watched the day that we watched Death of Louis XIV, which is the original Death Wish.
Mm.
Patrick wrote a really nice review about it that sort of captured what I was feeling, which is like, I went into it being like, okay, I know this movie has conservative politics, but it's going to be wild, right? Like, it's going to be, like, crazy. And mm-hmm. I thought I would get that out of it. But it's not even that. Like, Bronson just, like, casually pulls his gun on people and shoots them, and then they die. Like, there's nothing insane or strange or, like, you know, fever dream about this movie. It's very staid and, like, pretty boring to look at. And that's, you know, when you combine it with its obviously pretty awful politics, there's really nothing to hold on to in this movie. Like, you don't even get, like, really a fun Bronson performance.
Mm.
Like, he's not being, like, gross. Like, in Once Upon a Time in the West, he's just, like, sort of there.
Right.
So...
sounds about right.
Yep.
Guess we'll have to watch Rolling Thunder to get our super gross
that's a movie
on.
That's wild and crazy. there.
Dirty Harry, Rolling Thunder, double bill.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. There you go.
Dirty Harry is a pretty cool looking movie.
Yeah, that's a pretty wild and crazy movie.
Ron Siegel.
Oh, man. I just keep thinking about that scene in Dirty Harry where the guy pays the other guy to beat him up. Like, what is this?
What?
Literally no one has ever done this before.
What is this?
Oh, Callahan. You're so dirty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. All
right. This is
right.
Pick.
Yeah. So Platoon is based on Oliver Stone's time experience in Vietnam. It's set in 1967. Charlie Sheen plays Chris Taylor, who drops out of university and goes to Vietnam, enlists at a platoon at the on the border of Vietnam and Cambodia. And the movie is just like a story of his year there in a platoon. That is basically led by two sergeants, Sergeant Barnes, played by Tom Berenger, who's the devil-ish part of the platoon. He likes to kill and maim and generally do evil things. And Sergeant Elias, played by Willem Dafoe, who's the angel of the two, and who's really nice and who smokes a lot of dope and who's naked a lot in this movie. So as the movie goes on, it's like there's a lot of the conflict between the two starts to grow. And as there's more and more infighting within the platoon, there's also more and more violence on screen. And let's say they find themselves fighting each other as well as the North Vietnamese army.
Mm-hmm. I like this movie, and I was very close to liking it a lot, except for I don't think Oliver Stone is a very good director. sort of everything that I'll grow to dislike about his filmography is on display early here. Like, he has a lot of bad choices in actors and then directs a lot of them badly. Mm-hmm. And I think he's also, like, pretty moralizing as well. Like, the very last line of the film leaves, like, a real sour taste in my mouth because it's not how I was feeling about it up until that point. But there's something about the sound editing and the video editing that is a lot sadder and more just like dirty than, I guess, the overall narrative that works for me about this film. When I was like, oh, I don't like watching this movie, and I'm kind of into that. This movie is just about really shitty situation and shitty people, and it never makes you comfortable with that from, like, the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Patrick?
I didn't like this movie, and I agree with you about Oliver Stone. He's extremely, extremely moralizing.
I also agree with
Mitt. Very, very obvious about it in this movie. I just, in general, think it's kind of it's sort of a weird cop-out to have a movie where you're like, yeah, the Americans did bad shit in Vietnam, but then to, like, sort of tokenize and, you know, I guess just conglomerate all Vietnamese people into this one amorphous blob that's either being, you know, in distress or, you know, just sort of like a wave of nature coming to destroy everything. And I'm like, that feels incredibly dehumanizing at the same time. So you can't sit there and tell me, oh, hey, America did bad shit, but, like, America's still cool. Like, we still had to do our job over there. It was like Ilya's review of Ken Burns's Vietnam documentary. It was like, no, that you can't, like, come back at me and be like, but there were some angels in the army too. It's like, no, get that out of here. I don't know, Basil.
Yeah, I guess I'm more or less on the same boat as Patrick. I think that I had a real snarky idea. We were talking about a pre-podcast, but there's a part late in the movie when Keith David's talking about how after this, every day is gravy. And I was like, as soon as I'm done watching this movie, every day is gravy. I think that I agree with Ruben that there's, like, some interesting ideas within this movie, but I feel like it hits it over the head so hard. Like, I remembered the last time that I watched it, finding the very opening of the movie with, like, the juxtaposition of them just, like, dragging, like, body bags, like, onto a helicopter right after the other guys got off. I was like, oh, that's really affecting. That's really cool. I remember liking that a lot. But then watching it this time, I was like, oh, but I hate this music. It's, like, really hammering at home. Like,
yes, here's the adagio for sure.
Yes.
Now we're doing the Little Mermaid.
Yes.
Wouldn't you think Vietnam's complete?
So, yeah, and I mean, obviously, I think some of my feelings were affected by recent viewings of Apocalypse Now, which I continue to love.
The better Sheen war movie?
Yeah, exactly. I was like,
the elder.
Most of what I liked about this movie was like also within that movie, but done better. So I was like, this is a little bit of a watered down. And then, you know, I mean, I think that it, like, the movie kind of vacillates between two things in a way that it's like Oliver Stone being like, I fought in Vietnam. I really want to show like what it was like day to day on the ground. If that were a Hollywood movie, like, like it doesn't commit to like a real like sense of like just like boringness and like kind of like, I don't know. Everyone's kind of saying stuff that's like from a Hollywood script. So I was like, this isn't really what it was like. Like, people didn't talk like this all the time when you were in. Like, and
they
so like
pithy aphorisms.
Yeah, like that kind of middle ground didn't quite work for me because, like, I think that Apocalypse Now really commits to something else, which is like a real like metaphorical like existential feeling. Like, it's like not trying to depict reality at all, but it is like grappling with real things. And I think if the movie had gone super far the other way, it obviously wouldn't have won Best Picture, but it would have been a cool movie maybe to be like, you know, here's a bunch of people sitting around doing nothing mostly, and then every once in a while they die or kill people. It's pretty awful. Ilya?
Yeah. Between the Vietnam documentary and this, I don't think I'm ever going to watch a movie about the Vietnam War that I'm going to like. Unfortunately, I'm actually kind of scared of watching
Apocalypse Now.
To be honest.
So good.
Because I'm... yeah, I think that there's a really weird thing that so far permeates throughout all American movies about Vietnam, which is it's a basically not about Vietnam at all. It's about America, right? So Vietnam is just a backdrop. And I mean, everything about this movie is about whatever is going on in America at the time. There's the two camps, and one is the liberal camp, and one is the not-so-liberal camp. And they have their infighting and whatever. And then they happen to kill, pillage, burn, rape, or almost rape a bunch of Vietnamese people along the way. That's just part of the self-discovery, though. Right? I hated this movie. I thought that Stone is a terrible director. And it's obvious in the way that also, like, how these the characters of Barnes and Elias are, like, not really even characters at all. They're just these two, like, devil and angel. They're not even, like, a dialectic where there's, like, any sort of thing that's going on that's like between the two poles or whatever. They're just like a really boring binary. And Charlie Sheen ends up just being like, oh, I guess I'm like Elias then because he's nice or whatever. It's fucking, I don't know. It was really frustrating for me to watch because the pretend profundity of the two characters really bothered me a lot. Yeah. There we go.
Space is a jigsaw puzzle.
Well, we're not going to have a one from the heart situation because I'm really not going to dig my heels in about this movie.
Yeah.
Because I do think that, like, there are a lot of stupid parts.
You're not going to die on this hill?
No. I'm sure not. But I don't agree with a lot of what Ilya just said there. Maybe on the script level,
Mm-hmm.
I agree with it, but that I never feel like this movie is, and I guess it could totally be unintentional, able to champion anyone. Like, everyone in this movie is really a shitty person. And, like, he's choosing between, like, an extremely shitty person and a mostly shitty person. Like, by the end of the film, like, there's nothing in the end. There's the scene where they come upon this town, and Charlie Sheen's character is shooting at this one-legged man to make him dance.
Yeah.
And then later in the same scene, he saves a woman from being raped, and he's like, she's a human being. And I'm like, that other guy was a human being too.
Yeah.
Like, 20 minutes ago, you were shooting at. Like, your morality is totally just random. And that is often how I feel like when people talk about, when Americans talk about the Vietnam situation, that they come across. They're like, oh, these horrible things were okay, and these horrible things were bad.
Mm.
And it's like, none of that makes any sense.
Yeah. I think it's like when people will be like, the Vietnam's used some dirty tricks, and, you know, it's like, well, it, like... You're going to talk about how they were, like, terrorists and blew shit up, but then you'll be like, oh, but the Americans did horrible things, and then you want to moralize about, like, oh, well, you know, it was an unjust war or whatever. And I'm like, but you were a minute ago just, like, talking about how they were, like, awful terrorists, and they used, like, dirty guerrilla tricks to fight, and I'm like, that feels like the same thing that's going on here, where it's like, he will show you these scenes of like, oh man, everything was so bad and fucked up then, but then he'll like have the character come in and do a really obvious like hero move, so you're like still on his side kind of, where he's like, oh well, he's you know, he's bad and he's like confused by all this stuff, but he's still a good guy, like he's still, you know, really good. And I think he actually, like, it, to your point about him choosing between a sort of shitty person and an incredibly shitty person, like I think the fact that Sergeant Elias is in this movie, like, really confuses all of that, because he's so obviously the, like, you know, the angel of the movie, where he's like, oh, everything he does is sort of right, and you're supposed to think that he's really cool because he's, like, running around, like, shooting all these Vietnamese people, like, really deftly, and I'm just like, so... The way that you're really, really going to get me on his side is by showing how good he is at murdering people. I'm really confused by, like, what, I don't know, what your morality is in all of this. Because at the end of the day, it does seem like where he judges people also lies on, like, how good they are at being soldiers or whatever. It's like how good they are at combat, like, factors into how good a person they are. Because he has a lot of characters in the end be like, oh, well, they were cowards, you know, like John C. McGinley's character, like, oh, he was a coward, and he's, you know, well, he's fucked now because he's going to have to lead this platoon that's decimated by the end. And I find it such a weird disconnect, because he wants to set up this play of, like, the angel and the devil, but I don't know.
I mean, I'm curious, Patrick, because, like, what action sequence did you think was supposed to be, like, satisfying? Like, I don't like this movie, but I don't think there's any point where it's like, oh, look at these badasses fucking
killing. Yeah, but I mean, that's like the obvious part of the movie, where it's like so anti-war, it beats you over the head about how anti-war it is.
But you get that scene, you get the scene right before Elias and Barnes sort of have their showdown, where Elias, he's like, gonna go off into the jungle, and Taylor's like, let me come with you. He's like, no, I move faster on my own. And then he's like running around, like dodging behind trees and like shooting Vietnamese, and like you see him just like just taking all these dudes out really fast. And then he like runs into Barnes.
I wouldn't say that's satisfying, though. I mean, I think
I think it is supposed to be, though. It's shot like it's a fucking like action sequence from,
well, I'm just
like Die Hard, that part.
Just to pull back a little bit, though, like, I'm not sure, when Ruben, you said that you disagree with me, I'm not sure what we're really disagreeing on. Like, I think in that sense, I feel the same way, in the sense of that, yeah, all these characters, they're shitty people. I guess I disagree on the fact that the movie sees them all as shitty people, because it's basically told from the perspective of Chris Taylor, right? So because of that, it does take like sides, and it does see like certain, you know, flaws and or positive elements within those shitty people, right? So
I mean, I don't find him to be a reliable narrator, and I think there are moments in this movie that hint at the idea that he has no idea what he's talking about. And
yeah,
I mean, I think that, yeah, like there, like, because he I mean, even I think it's obvious, well, or like really nails it on the head, but like in the end thing, he's not talking like, oh, I chose the Elias way of living. He's like, I'm the product
of
both those dudes. But like, and that his like shifting morality that Ruben is talking about is like pretty present throughout. Like in the very final like action sequence or whatever you want to call it, like he's like shooting a bunch of dudes and like really excited about it in a way that I don't think you're supposed to be like, oh, what a cool dude. Like he looks like an animal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I don't think you're supposed to feel like, ah, Chris, like, I like this guy. Like, what a cool person. Like,
I mean, this is essentially true of every movie that we bring our baggage into it when we watch it. And, you know, while I did expect to dislike this movie, something about, I'm willing to, like, definitely admit that, like, I dislike war, and especially the Vietnam War, so much that, like, this movie just starts off on a level where I'm like, oh, I viscerally don't want to watch this. And I'm like, that's not normally how I feel exactly with war movies. And because I went into it not wanting to watch it in a way, I was like, someone somewhere who worked on this movie feels the same way that I do. Like, why? Why?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think like there's definitely a disgust, and like especially during the village scene, there's just like a really visceral thing going on there, where basically the same American soldiers that have classically always looked like, well, if not heroes, and at least like the moral center of the movies that they were in, doing things that like otherwise, probably closest thing would be like maybe Nazis would be doing, right, in a movie. And like the fact that you're just kind of like thrown into that, and the way that that's set up, like a smarter movie probably, maybe made by a better director, would have used that scene even more to make like a pretty interesting point, because actually before that movie starts, like the thing that kind of sets it all off is that the North Vietnamese army, they kill one of their, or a few of their people, right? And the last guy they find is a black guy who's like nailed to a tree.
Yeah.
And there's this scene that just pans across the whole platoon and how they're looking. And it ends at Tom Berenger, who's looking like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm really angry now. I'm going to fucking show these people. And like, and obviously like what you're thinking, you're thinking like watching this, like since whenever did guys like Barnes give a shit about any black people being nailed to anything? Unless it's something where they feel like they can use this for their gain. And I'm like,
a good actor would nail that.
Yes.
That subtlety.
A good actor would nail it, and a good director would also help him probably nail that. But what happens here instead is just this, like, okay, they build off of this, like Charlie Sheen is saying, like, at this point we loved him, we loved Barnes in this moment because he was like our rage, our collective rage about what happened, and then he's seen doing what he's doing and whatever, and like it builds up so much emotion with that scene. Unfortunately, because this is a bad movie, none of that emotion really goes like anywhere remotely with like a point. It's just there, and then it's kind of like the way that they use that Elias scene to like end it on this like satisfying note. So after Barnes shoots that Vietnamese lady and is threatening to shoot the girl, Elias storms in and punches him in the face. So you get like the cool American moment, the cool American movie moment where like a bad guy is brought to, at least momentarily, punched in the face. Isn't that satisfying?
Yeah,
I think that sucks.
Yeah, I mean, the movie is maybe a little more, well, I mean, I guess ambivalent is the right word, but like, it also ends with, that's not how the scene actually ends. It ends with them burning down that village, well, which is...
That's another scene, though. That's the next scene.
No.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but I mean, like that's the continuation of that moment is like, they do the horrible thing, Defoe runs in to try and stop it, and then goes along with them burning down the village. That's,
yeah, he does.
That's like an official order. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, that... Like, so, I mean, like, I think because Oliver Stone is, as we've all said, like, not particularly talented at, like he clearly has, like, a lot of ideas and probably a lot of cocaine based on my understanding of who he is.
Two great tastes that go great together.
Yeah. So, The combination of those two things, he really isn't capable of wrangling things. But I think that, like, you know, like, it is weird in a movie that supposedly is, like, a, like, showing, like, that war is pretty awful to, like, see Willem Dafoe's character as the virtuous one. But who keeps signing up for war?
Like, yeah, he does.
Like, he's on his third tour of duty. Like he, you can't, like, I think that, again, he doesn't nail this, but I think that it is interesting. Like, the best person in the movie is, like, a career soldier who, like, thinks that the war is a terrible idea, but, like, keeps coming back. Like, he doesn't have to, like, one tour of duty.
Because he's good at it.
He could be gone. Yeah.
I'm not sure he thinks it's a terrible idea.
I mean, he talks about, like, how they're going to lose, like, you know, I mean, which, again, seems like historical hindsight.
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, in 67, they were like, I don't know, like, if he was an actually good person, he would stop.
I agree with that. I think that that's a 100% good point, except that I don't think the movie... is in agreement with you there, because I don't think the movie is like slyly criticize him for like keeping signing up all the time. I think there's like a the same sense with Elias as there is with that captain, right, who is also like the movie's
the lieutenant.
No, not the lieutenant, the one that's more higher up than
the guy that calls in the fire.
Clean.
Yeah. The one that calls
everyone
in the bombs.
Else is dirty, and he gets to look clean.
I think that that's like another instance of like a guy being like, well, he's like a hardened war veteran. He knows what it takes to do this thing, but he's not a cruel guy or whatever. And like somewhere in there is like where the movie's morality is really at. I feel like, and not
so
in like
me,
all these people are terrible. I don't think the movie sees it that way.
Distinction that you're making. Is we've covered this in the past, a less important distinction to me than it is definitely to Patrick, because we've had this conversation a lot, and I guess maybe I'm getting it from you as well. Like, on a certain level, I don't care what Oliver Stone wanted to do for this movie,
what he thinks about his movie.
I watched this movie and I don't like any of these people. And maybe he wanted to make something that was really valorizing of Elias's noble contributions, but that is not how he comes across in this film to me. He comes across like sort of a mix of what Patrick was saying, like at times like a gross video game character who is like championing his morality on one side. And then as soon as like the action starts, he murders like 100 people. And then he's like, let's smoke some weed and read the Bible, guys. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah. But then like, what isn't like, I mean, I guess I agree with you. Like, in the terms of, like, that's also how I see him. I'm not sure that like you could really make that argument based on this movie, though. Like, there's so many scenes in this movie where Elias is shown to be like, oh, look at him, he's the only guy who's like really like he's like free, and he's like he's yeah. butt naked in that one scene, and like here's he's smoking dope and he's really nice to the young guy, and then he dies like an angel with his hands suspended in the air. Like,
yeah, he's like
why?
Jesus. Yeah.
Why is this yeah, movie I mean, I showing like all of that?
Yeah, I was.
And then
say, like when that was yeah. happening. I mean, I guess it's become iconic because it's like the poster and everything. But I was like, this might be one of the worst shots in film. Like, I can't believe that this is what everyone latched onto. It was like the image that really sells this movie. I was like, the music is really bad. Mm. And then he's like getting shot, and he like makes this weird face with his teeth. He's like,
and it like it goes on forever too. Like, yeah. it's he keeps yeah. going up like this and then falling down, and then going up like this and then falling down again. It's like almost weirdly comic. And I'm like, maybe they yeah. just wanted to make sure they got
that
a lot
was
of those
day
shots.
We lost our innocence. Not all the days before that when we were constantly murdering people. None of those
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
That was the day that we lost our innocence.
And also, yeah, while that is happening, how many North Vietnamese are shot by like that fucking helicopter or whatever, yeah. like around him the whole time? But no, sure. let's focus on the poor dude who's like got his hands up in the air or whatever.
Poor white man.
Fucking gross.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. Like, it's puzzling to me to take in the context of this movie, like, to see all of that and say, like, no, I don't like this movie, and I don't think that the movie wants me to like this movie, like, or the movie wants me to like this character. And I'm like, I don't know, like, all the context clues that I got from it were that I'm really supposed to like Elias and I'm really supposed to think he's a badass.
Yeah.
And I don't...
I mean, I think...
Yeah.
At this point, we're kind of talking in circles because Ruben has already said that he yeah. doesn't care what Oliver Stone wants him
I mean, I understand that, but I just don't understand what context clues you're getting that... I don't know.
No, okay. He's saying...
He don't care about them context clues.
I mean, no, I think there are formal hints that show you that there's what the movie is less on his side. One of the things that I like about this movie is reminds me of Mulatte, and that none of the animals care what's going on. There's like all these insert shots of animals, and they're just living their lives, or when they're pigs sadly tied up and can't escape from explosions, even though they're scared. And there's something like, you know, someone somewhere is being like, these people are really concerned about the morality in this situation, but that doesn't really have anything to do with the actual reality of the situation. And I think the sound editing lends it this weird element as well. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I would normally be like, oh, that's bad sound editing, where someone is like sighing or making some sort of noise, and then when it cuts away from them, it cuts the sound out immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't continue into the next shot, and the movie is filled with close-ups, and it's kind of like everyone is in their own impenetrable separate world.
Yeah.
Like, they can't escape their close-ups, they can't escape the sound editing. And I was like, oh, like, this is sad. Like, no one sees anyone. Everyone is just like in their own mind. And, you know, of course, that's one of the reasons why I feel like Taylor is like a bit of an unreliable narrator, is that like he never expands beyond his own experience. But I mean, I think there are arguments for both sides, because I think Oliver Stone is a bad director.
Yeah, right. And also Charlie Sheen is a terrible actor, so maybe that would also have changed. If Charlie Sheen were a better actor, maybe a lot of those things would also work a little bit better.
I don't think he's great in this movie, but I think he's a terrible person, but I don't think he's a terrible actor.
I thought, like, his shouting in this movie was good, but his regular acting was bad. That was, like, my takeaway.
Yeah, I did not like his voiceover at all.
Yeah, his voiceover is terrible. When it disappears for, like, 40 minutes, and then it comes back, I was like, oh, I thought it was gone.
Yeah.
Oh,
I thought we were past this. Ugh. But, I mean, I think that, again, like, it's actually pretty rare for contemporary actors, especially young ones, to do voiceover well. Like, Harrison Ford's actually a very good actor, but the Blade Runner voiceover is really terrible. Like, it's not good at all.
That's why I was left out of the director's cut.
Yeah. But I think that, what was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, I think that basically no one except for Keith David is very good in this movie. So I think that, like, you know, even if Charlie Sheen were, you know, well, I mean, he's pretty young, but I think he's better in that other movie that we saw. What was it called? The motor car one?
The Wraith?
Ghost car?
Oh, the Wraith. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like that. Right around this.
I think
that's
he's
like the exact same time.
People don't talk about comedic performances that often as being good, but Charlie Sheen is the best part of both Hot Shots movies.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
And yeah, he's, you know, I agree that he's a terrible person, and I'm happy to leave his contributions in the past, but I feel a little uncomfortable saying that he's a terrible actor. I think the Sheens are mostly good actors. I like Estevez and Martin and Charlie.
Yeah. I also think Charlie Sheen's good in his small role in Ferris Bueller's Day.
Yeah, I think I was thinking of this movie, which I really don't like him in at all, and Wall Street, were also directed by Oliver Stone, which I also didn't like him.
I think we might have found the common element.
So, yeah.
Performances. I never seen even the whole thing, and I saw it a long time ago, what I did see, but I remember both Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis in Natural Born Killers being some of the worst performances maybe of all time. Where I was I turned the movie off because I was like, oh, I can't watch them act anymore.
Yeah.
The movie made me viscerally sick.
I love the way that Doug Benson makes fun of the scene in Wall Street when Martin Sheen is like talking to Charlie Sheen in an elevator, and he's talking about how he doesn't he judges a person by their actions, not by the size of their wallet or something like that. I don't remember the exact line, but that like he starts off talking normally, but then when he says wallet, he like yells it like their wallet. Yeah. And I feel like that's not a line delivery Martin Sheen would have come to naturally.
Is Martin Sheen also in Wall Street?
Yes. Yes, he's
he plays
his dad.
Martin Sheen's dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
so they
good.
They got all of them. They got Michael Douglas, they got Martin Sheen, and they got Charlie Sheen. Get the whole family. Yeah, is Emilio in there anywhere?
Nope.
They got all of them.
Ruben was talking about, which I thought was actually an interesting point, like the way that this movie shows, like the way it's filmed, like it shows nature. So he mentioned the animals, but like I was constantly reminded of the BBC documentary Private Life of Plants by David Attenborough. Like it's just like so many jungle shots and like so many shades of green, which was pretty amazing. Like, and there's one shot in particular I remember where one of the soldiers has like his helmet, and on this helmet there's a pack of cools that are also green, right? And then there's the green of the jungle, and then there's the light falling through, and there's like about 100 different shades of green in one shot. I'm like, that's pretty awesome. And definitely, yeah, I think I agree that Stone also being kind of this slightly more esoteric guy, like if you watch any of his movies, there's a lot of like very like attempts to like, you know, this is about the desert or whatever, in that weird Sean Penn movie or whatever, that U-Turn movie, and like or The Doors or whatever, like there's always something about nature in those movies, and it's always like weirdly mystical. And I think that there's definitely something going on here, except that And that's actually maybe in this movie way more subtly so than in his other movies, because there's no like shaman that appears and like tells you about like what this means.
God.
Yeah.
But I mean,
he's like the weird hippie granddad. He's
yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, in a way it is interesting that, like, he exists as a person, because, like, he is, like, he does seem, like, very, very politically conflicted. Like, certain aspects of his, like, filmography come off, like, really deeply conservative, but then others seem, like, pretty far left of, like, what Hollywood would actually make. Yeah. So,
like Snowden?
Normally make I mean, yeah, and then like, and that it is because of that confliction, like, sometimes easy to read his movies in like really different ways. I was listening to the Film Comment podcast the other day, and the woman who hosts it, she's really cool, but her interpretation of Snowden was that Oliver Stone thinks Snowden is a traitor, and I was like, I don't know how you got that interpretation. I don't think that's a good movie, but like, I don't think that that's what I came away with. And so, but I think that like, because of the way that like Oliver Stone, like, is all over the place, like with what his like ideology is, like you can come away being like, maybe he thinks Edward Snowden actually is like a bad person. Like, maybe he thinks he fucked his government.
Something that I have no real interest in, like, saving Oliver Stone's career from, like, film critics, but something that I think that I've noticed definitely in myself, but I feel like in general, like, a zeitgeist when it comes to critique is to sort of place things in, like, an all good or an all bad box. And it's kind of like, if someone, like, when I was going through, God, what is the name of the director of Blonde Venus?
Von Sternberg.
Yeah. Sternberg. When I was going Von Sternberg's career, I kept being like, is he a feminist or is he not? Like, I was trying to ferret this out, and it was like, well, no, he's both. Yeah. And, like, for a long time, I couldn't, like, figure out, like, I was like, ugh, some parts of this movie are, like, really gross and regressive, and some parts of this movie are, like, really progressive, and it's like, well, yeah, that's mostly how people are.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a tendency, you know, like, again, I don't care enough about this movie to like defend it that hardcore, to be like, when you come into it with your there's a better word than baggage, because I think baggage is too negative, where you're like, ah, I found the things that confirm my thesis about the Vietnam War, or about Oliver Stone, or about Charlie Sheen, whatever I had, and anything that's possibly good about this movie, I'm just going to push that to the side, because there's enough of an argument to be made for what's bad about it, that's all I care about. And it is there. I agree with that. Mm. That argument is there, and there is enough in this movie that is bad to just walk away from it and be like, Oliver Stone is gross. He has gross ideas. But I don't know. I personally don't. I'm trying not to do that, I guess. And I'm sure that I don't always succeed. That there are lots of directors who I walk into their movies and I start watching them, and I'm like, exactly what I thought. Fuck this movie.
In your face.
But I had
two
experiences this year, and one I feel much more strongly and happily about, where I was able to eventually come around to what I thought the director was doing, and that's Phantom Thread, which I haven't talked about on this podcast, even though I've talked about it often, where I was like, the first couple of scenes, I was like, ugh, this movie is stupid. Paul Thomas Anderson has made another stupid movie. And then I was like, kind of let myself, you know, I it was really random, but I sort of got broken a little bit by an unintentional thing that had nothing to do with the movie, where I started laughing from a totally unrelated thing, and it sort of like eased my tension, and I was like, maybe the beginning is supposed to be kind of stupid, because this character is stupid. And like, I just sort of let that reading go, and then I really enjoyed the movie. Again, I don't know if this movie is that worthy of that defense, but it was just Basil sort of made me think about that subject and how I'm interested in it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, well, I don't know. Like, the reason that Oliver Stone came up on that film comment podcast was they were talking about formative filmmakers and, like, you know, stuff, people you got into in your teens that, like, influenced you and maybe, like, you don't like them that much anymore, but is important. And they were talking about Oliver Stone, you know, that, like, he hasn't necessarily aged well and he hasn't done anything worth watching in like 20 years or something like that. But that it is weird that like that he was a thing, like he was a big deal and like they gave him a lot of money to make super fucking weird movies. Like, like JFK is like a weird movie. Natural Born Killers is very disgusting, weird, but it's like a weird fucked up movie.
It's an insane
and,
movie.
Like
The Shape of Water from 92 or whatever.
Yeah. And then like I haven't seen it, but Nixon is like 3.5 hour movie that apparently is shot like JFK with like crazy editing and like different film stocks and stuff like that. But just like about Anthony Hopkins like playing Richard Nixon, like that's like how could you pitch that movie and be like, okay, like it's gonna be 3.5 hours, it's gonna be like really rapidly edited, it's gonna be so paranoid, like it'll just really evoke like this is what Nixon was, and then like I'm gonna cast a British guy who's like not gonna do a Nixon voice, like
yeah. I mean, I guess that is pretty crazy. I guess this movie is what led to that, no? I guess this movie is the one that gave him... I mean, this is an AFI Top 100 movie of all time.
It won every award.
So while I absolutely agree with Ruben that it shouldn't... Like, it's actually way more rewarding to try and not let your let yourself be, like, super... Like, pushed by whatever your preconceptions about the director or whatever are. It's more interesting to discover something maybe that's maybe not the intention of the director at all or whatever. I feel like, and you've made, like, a few good points that there's enough of that in this movie, too. But I feel like, in this case, both this movie's stature, like, I guess, even still critically, and the nature of the Vietnam War being filmed...
Yeah.
To this day, based largely also on the success of movies such as this, in a way that completely disregards whatever is even politically or geopolitically even happening, because this fucking movie never even mentions communism one time. It's mostly
it
concerned
Cambodia once
with once in a like a throwaway line. The only thing it cares about is American interior politics, and the rest of it is just backdrop. And
absolutely.
Up to this day, people still make war movies like this, and I feel like that's
That's
a shitty thing, and like that should probably outweigh, in this case, even like the more nuanced points that you made. But otherwise, I think feel like that's a fair point to make.
In your face.
I actually made a note that said, does every bad war cliche like come from this movie?
No.
Because I feel like every time now that I see like all of the bad war cliches I see in war movies, like even that Chinese movie Youth that we watched, I was like, a lot of the bad cliches from this movie are in that movie. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
They probably invented some of their own, but there were a lot of bad war movies before this one.
Yeah.
They've
been working on this.
Especially about Vietnam. Like, John Wayne's whatever Green Berets or whatever the fuck that was called.
Oh, yeah.
But no one liked that one, like, except for like weirdo super conservatives, even at the time. Like, critics all hated that. But I feel like there's no way that the guy who's got a girl at home who then dies right away. Like, there's no way this movie invented that.
I hope it did.
That's forever. I kept thinking the king was going to get shot. I kept thinking
the one
king's
for me.
Like, helicopter was going to get blown up or something as he was flying away to go home. I was like, oh, no. Like, the tomorrow was my retirement or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Sean C. McGinley gets that or whatever. Although then they sort of subvert it and then unsubvert it, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you can't send me out there. I'm about to go on R&R. I got a bad feeling about this. And then he doesn't die. And he's like, oh, phew, I get to go on my R&R. And then they're like, nope, you're going back there. And he's like,
you get the whole platoon now. You got to run the whole platoon.
You're in charge because everyone else is dead.
We kind of breezed past acting a little bit, but I wanted to say that... one, John C. McGinley is probably my least favorite performance. In a series of bad performances. And a close second is Richard Edson. Do you guys know who that is? Because I had to look up his name.
Yes, the guy that plays, he plays John Turturro's brother in Do the Right Thing. I recognize him.
And apparently he's also the drummer for the original Sonic Youth, which is why I think he keeps getting roles, because directors like Sonic Youth. But yeah, he's one of my...
What character did he play in this?
I don't know if he appears at all in the movie before the scene where they find the bunker, and then he finds the maps, and he's like, this is meaningful, and then he picks it up and blows up.
That guy.
He's like, I got a bad feeling about this place. And then he gets
He's one of my few complaints about Do the Right Thing is that I really don't like his performance in Do the Right Thing. And
I don't like my one guy. Note on John C. McGinley was why. John C. McGinley, why? Why did he even happen ever? Why was John C. McGinley a thing?
Bad in Point Break, too.
He's bad in everything. It's really amazing. Like, I don't get how beloved he is.
It's pretty funny that he's like, to me, he's like doing all the acting all the time. Because he's like always like chewing the gum and like really enunciating his lines and like doing a lot of stuff with his eyebrows. And I was just like, man, like just like pick one thing if you're gonna overdo something. Like, I'd refer
Barnes,
you
gonna take that shit, Barnes.
I also like how quickly he will change characters with like no like. He's like a snap on and off. Like he'll be like, with Barnes or whatever, and he's like trying to act like all gruff or something like that. And he's like, yeah, we're the bosses or whatever. And then Barnes is like, we're gonna take that hill. And he's like, oh, what? You think that we should do that? Now I'm scared. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, Jesus.
Like no emotional transitions.
Yeah. Guys, you really think that's a good idea? What are you talking about?
Oh, man, I read one piece of trivia that apparently, because this movie's really popular with the Army, which is really great, so with the official U.S. Army, so much for its supposedly anti-war fucking element. But, like, one of the things, like...
Army is stupid, though.
Yeah.
I don't trust their opinion.
Fair enough.
I mean, they
probably like Apocalypse Now as well.
Yeah, and Hurt Locker.
Yeah,
I mean the military approved Hurt Locker.
Yeah, although I think that's probably all of that is probably for reasons like, oh, look at how they portray combat situations, like the way people move and hold their weapons. It's all really good, like stuff like that.
Yeah, like I didn't find this out until very recently, but the DOD and like military have to approve every movie if they want to use their uniforms in it. Mm-hmm. So.
That was a tweet that somebody reposted a bunch of where it's like they have to approve movies that show the military, so that's why the military never really gets a good lashing in proper Hollywood movies.
So I've never
they brought it up on
what? Oh, I have this memory of someone who worked on Zero Dark Thirty being interviewed maybe on The Daily Show about how they had to work around that because they didn't get approval. But then, like, I also read things that they had, like, you know, behind the scenes documents that like no other movie had access to or whatever, that they were like the CIA like gave them, you know.
I mean, it could have been like a like it could have been a counterbalancing thing where like at first it was like, oh yeah, we'll help you out, this sounds like an interesting project, and then when they saw the direction it was going, it was like, never mind. Like,
yeah
you
so
can't use our
to
stuff.
Me, like, again, like this movie made me feel a certain way, and I totally agree with what Ilya was saying before about it in like a wider political landscape. Like, if there were a lot of movies coming out about the Vietnam War from the Vietnam side, and this movie was like, you know, just a critique of America in the Vietnam. Like, it would fit, like, nicely. It was, like, you know, it's similar to, like, Detroit. Like, people are like, we're so tired of seeing, like, black violence as a way to, like, critique white people. And it's like, yeah.
Yep.
In a wider scope, your commentary makes perfect sense. Although, I think Detroit is a really good critique of white people.
Yeah.
But maybe give, you know, black people some interior lives. Yeah. Maybe give the Vietnamese, you know, a chance to talk about these things themselves. Yeah. And yeah, Zero Dark Thirty is a movie that I feel much more strongly about, that, like, people have, it seems like, very much been wanting to, like, cancel that movie, as the kids are saying these days.
Yeah. And but I feel like,
I think they took one or two things that don't work about that movie and then built an entire argument over things that the movie clearly is not in favor of. They're like, the movie is in favor of torture. And I'm like, no, it really isn't. And everything else that Catherine Bigelow has done over her career, I feel like, shows that she is anti-cop and anti-military. And people say the same thing about Blue Steel. They're like, Blue Steel is propaganda. I'm like, what about every other movie she's made?
Yeah. I feel like as long as these movies are successful, what we're going to get is not movies that suddenly have the other perspective in it. We're just going to get movies that are better at doing exactly the same thing that this movie is doing. So it'll just be a bit more subtle or whatever. Just to finish the other point I was making, why I brought up the military, there's a piece of trivia on IMDb about this movie. It's so hilarious. It's, in many U.S. military leadership classes, the character of Lieutenant Wolf is used as an example of how not to behave as a junior officer. Which I think is just, let's just, look, guys, don't do that. Don't be the most transparently awful character, even in this fucking movie. Like, even worse than Barnes is just this guy who's just like, I'm too scared.
Yeah, it's worse to be feckless than it is to be a monster.
Exactly. Exactly.
To the military.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's that guy, at least he, when he's killing people, he's like, he's a man about it, you know? This guy,
at least he's decisive.
Well,
like, that they would,
and competent.
Yeah, I think they're also admitting that, like, awful things are gonna happen, so it's important that the people at the top hold them accountable occasionally, because there's no way to escape those awful things. We can't restructure our corporation to make it less awful.
Yeah.
But what we can do is make sure the CEOs know how to hold people accountable once they've done the awful thing, sort of.
Yep.
Yeah.
We can
the takeaway.
But I think that is pretty amazing, because it feels like if they did decide to do that, they must have thought that that was a good idea. Like, maybe people were this bad, so they're like, oh, we need to show somebody, like... Like, I don't know, because the way that he's portrayed in this movie, it would be like as if there was trivia that, like police academies showed, like, the movie Police Academy to, like, be like, don't be like this.
This is not proper police officer behavior.
Like, that feels like you should know, like, oh, this is, like, from the moment he appears on screen, he's, like, so transparently... Yeah. Like, bad at his job, that, like, it shouldn't be a thing that you need to remind people, like, don't do this.
Yes.
It's... People who work at liquid nitrogen factories, don't jump into the thing like the T-1000 does. Let's watch that scene from Terminator. This is what not to do. Don't jump into the molten steel.
This is what the cybernetic organisms of the future will be showing to other cybernetic organisms. Not do that.
The other sort of, like, I guess, narrative thing, and again, you know, I may be reading too much into it, but that there's it. When we talked about it a little bit pre-podcast, it seemed like the part of the film that even the people who disliked about the film kind of liked, which is the idea that Taylor sees his decision before he goes to Vietnam as being kind of noble, and then the poor blacker people are like, there's nothing noble about what you did.
Yeah.
You're an idiot
yeah.
for not taking advantage of your wealth.
Right. Yes.
And to me, that's, you know, one of the ways in which the film questions his whole perspective
yep.
about any of it. It's like, you know, he, in a way, is metaphorically doing what the U.S. did or thinks that it's doing. They're like, oh, these poor Vietnamese people are suffering. We should imperialize it with our wealth. We should be willing to sacrifice our boys over there. And the boys are like, no, you're an idiot. Why would you ever think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
And all of the film is filtered through him, who is an idiot.
Mm-hmm. There's actually even, actually to add to that, there's later point where that guy, Ra, son of Anthony Quinn, I remember that's the actor.
Nice.
He tells, like, Charlie Sheen is like, Eliza's just been killed. He's like sitting there, he's like, we gotta kill Barnes. And the guy tells him, like, you're an idiot. I remember the first time you came in here, you were talking about how you like idolize the guy, and now you're talking about killing him. Like, you haven't been right about one thing so far, which is pretty funny. And yeah, does show that while the movie is shown through his perspective, the movie is not equal to his perspective. Like, a lot of things happen because he's like seeing them and relaying them, but yeah, he's not like the one-to-one narrator of everything that's going on. I agree with that.
And those were my three things that I wrote down to talk about. Noble decision, nice. Animals unconcerned, strange sound editing.
I did want to mention a detail that I noticed, and I think I saw what I saw, but I'm pretty sure that there was a Nazi flag on that APC that was driving around at the end after the bombing has happened. That's a small detail. I don't know what it means exactly, but it does seem meaningful. But if you go back and look at the scenes where that APC is driving around, like finding survivors of the bombing at the end, I'm fairly certain that they have a Nazi flag hanging.
There's a lot. I've just Googled that, and there's a lot of sites that mention that. And it says, according to Stone, APC soldiers during the war were notorious for displaying Nazi paraphernalia on their vehicles. So,
interesting.
That was very intentional. Holy shit.
So,
whoa.
Stone representing reality comes up with unintentional commentary.
Yeah.
That sounds like a very good summary of my thoughts on this movie. I don't know how to fit this joke in, but of course, because I like the editing, I was like, I'll look up this editor and see what else they've done. Her name is Claire Simpson. And I was like, see if I want to watch anything else that she's edited in. I'll just say this, Mr. Critic, you could have solved this movie. I gave you all the clues.
Oh. Wow. She did the snowman.
It doesn't look like she's done anything good.
She's also the one apparently who told Oliver Stone to use that music, to use the adagio music in the beginning. Like the sad string music. She's like, this is great. This will definitely work.
I've got a question for you guys. Obviously, I don't think it applies to this movie for you, but have you ever started watching a movie and been like, this is stupid, but I like it?
Sure.
Because that was how almost immediately I felt about the beginning. Like when the music came in and it's like, body's coming in on the chopper, body's going out on the chopper. I was like, this is stupid, but I like it.
Yeah, I mean... That's how I felt about Den of Thieves. Nice.
Okay.
That first heist. I was like, oh, it's a heist in front of a donut shop. This is really dumb.
Yeah, that is how I felt about that movie, too. So, yes, I have felt that way about that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just remember when I was first watching the first And Now You See Me. I was like, this movie is really stupid. And Basil was like, yeah, it's bad. And I was like, no, it's great.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Now You See Me. Yeah, I think that's a good example.
That's a great example. God, those Now You See Me movies are so funny.
Yeah.
They're like a magic trick. It's like, you know it's fake. You know it's dumb. But you still are like, yay.
Well, we are like that. Most of the world is not on our side. Yeah. Or at least most of the critical world. They were popular enough to, you know, make some money.
Mm. Yeah, I just think that's a hilarious idea. They're like, we're going to make an action movie about magicians. Mm. But it's going to be like a magic trick.
Another note I made.
Yeah, brilliant. I feel like, I mean, I was going to say my problem with the movies partially is that I don't think they're particularly good magic tricks. Because I saw the twist coming both times.
Yeah.
I was like, this didn't trick me. It's not magic.
It failed at its basic task.
Magnets. It's magnets. Magnets. Except for you do understand it. You understand magnets. That guy doesn't understand magnets. I don't understand this. And I don't understand magnets. Magnets.
And I know I made is the voiceover. He talks Lee's writing to his grandma, and that reminded me of Spring Breakers. I hope that Harmony Korine literally watched Platoon before
Vietnam
making
forever.
Spring Breakers. Like, yeah, I could definitely make better drug scenes than this movie, and I'll populate it mostly with girls because that's another thing that's like apparently so much of this movie has been like. So much made about this movie is like homoerotic way, like obvious homoerotic displays that have not been there before. Its absence of women, right? And how that kind of, or actually to be precise, absence of white or black or American women. So there's plenty of Vietnamese women in this movie, but they're like every other Vietnamese character, just basically used... to make a point about the Americans in some way.
A sounding board.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. A nice Asian sounding board.
Yeah. So I'm not even sure, like, I guess the homoerotic thing was just, like, part of the realism or whatever. Like, yeah. It's just like...
No, it's gross. It's, and all the slurs that they're constantly saying.
Yeah, like, it's...
Yeah, I already hate these guys. I don't really need you to add this on top of it. This is boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like the way that he really leans into Kevin Dillard's character. Yeah. Like, he likes country music and not getting high. And those are more of the factors that prove he's a terrible person.
I mean, it's
bad country.
He doesn't deliver the line very well, but he has one of my favorite lines in the entire movie when he's like, everyone wants to leave, not me. You can do whatever the fuck you want here. All you gotta worry about is dying, and you won't even see that coming.
Yeah.
And I was like, good lord. I was like, man, if they had gotten like a real accomplished actor to deliver that line, I would have been like floored, like by how disgusting it is.
Yeah. He's a monster. Yeah. But, yep. He is definitely the lesser of the Dillons.
Haven't
watched multiple Matt Dillon movies. Right? Got rules.
Speaking of great comedic performances.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And there's something about Mary.
Yeah, he's super funny in Drugstore Cowboy also. Mm. And To Die For.
I remember very vaguely that very bad movie with him in, with like Andrew Dice Clay is in it. The big McCoy or the real McCoy, something like that.
The real McCoy.
Where it's like
I forgot that
it's
movie.
It's like weird,
A Night at McCoy's.
Or A Night at McCoy's. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like this weird like.
Night
at
McCoy's. Wow, we got there.
God.
It's a four-part journey.
Wow, so frustrating for the listeners, I'm sure. It's the one Night at McCoy's, you idiots. You idiots! So one big fan of that movie listening along, just really frustrated.
That's me. Every time I listen to a podcast, I get something wrong. That's me.
He's really funny in that movie too. That's really the only point I wanted to make before I could remember the title.
It's really gross, but every time I think about it, I still laugh when there's something about Mary, Ben Stiller's character, decides that he does want to pursue her even after Matt Dillon tries to turn him off, and he's like, I do want to follow up with Mary. And he goes, who, roller pig? Because he describes her as being overweight and in a wheelchair. And just like the way that he delivers the line, he's like, looks at him, he's like, who, roller pig? It makes me laugh. Oh, it's so awful.
Boy.
And his teeth, when she says that she likes good teeth, and he like shows off his new teeth. It's amazing. He's really good. Yeah, and Kevin Dillon is really bad, and so is Entourage.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, although that is a funny joke. That they basically just cast him to play himself. An unsuccessful version of brother of a much more successful actor.
And he was like, yep, I am in.
It's pretty amazing.
I am in.
He's like, it's true. I will take this part because I am unsuccessful and I need the money.
It's the best reason to take a part.
So what do you guys think? Did I change anyone's mind?
You made me bump my star rating up a little bit, so I like that. Feels good.
I think I'm probably still falling on the like 2-star side of this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were lower than that.
I thought you were much lower.
No, I didn't hate this movie. I just didn't like it. Like,
I still pretty much hate it as much as I did in the beginning, but this was a much more interesting discussion than I thought it would be, to be honest.
Yeah. I feel like that's the way I feel about Oliver Stone. It's like, I'm like, he feels like his heart is in the right place, but he just has a lot of hang-ups that I don't care for at all.
Yeah.
It's like, you should probably watch Grandpa. That
Putin documentary before you... declare that his heart's in the right
I don't know.
Place.
I think he thinks his heart is in the right place.
Depending on how hard the drugs are kicking in at any given moment, his heart's in any given place at once. Like, so.
He's the only person with his heart in his ass.
Yeah.
I do kind of want to rewatch Born on the 4th of July. I remember there's a really weird and kind of funny and strange part where Tom Cruise and another wounded veteran who's also in a wheelchair, they get mad at each other and they're like rolling their wheelchairs around and like trying to spit on each other while they're yelling at each other. And I'm like, what the fuck is this scene?
Holy shit.
I think it would be funny that like if there was a way to like chart our reactions to the movie, like, our reactions would all be similar because I also hate this movie, but, like, I like that I hate it. Like, that's just, like, a weird feeling. Yeah. I'm like, this movie is for gross. Sure.
I think that's it's a good way to feel, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Wrap up time?
Yeah,
let's do it.
So, I don't know what's coming next. Someone want to look that up for me?
Yeah, let's do it.
But until they get to that point, you can always subscribe to the podcast, and please do, using your podcast listening application, and give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. That's now easier to do if you have the Apple Podcast application, because you can do it on your phone. And you can find all of our content on loosecannons.net, and I believe based on when this one is coming out, the last of my countdown of the top 100 of the 2010s will have come out just before this podcast comes out, so check that out.
Nice. Yeah, White Mountains is going to be our next pick.
All right. Ooh, moving from something that won Best Picture huge success, it's a movie 10 people have seen. Classic Loose Cannons.
Yeah.
Mongolian film.
How we do.
We have a Patreon now, so you can give us money if you support what we're doing, or if you want to have us do a thing, because we have perks. So if you're like, I really hate loose cannons, I want them to write a retrospective on Paul Thomas Anderson, because they always talk about how they don't like him. You can pay us like $100 and we'll do it. We don't care.
You know how we do.
Yeah. I mean, that's really cheap if you think about it.
It's really cheap to humiliate us.
And thank you very much, obviously, to the two people who have signed up to be our Patreons already.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. Shout
Michael
out
Quinn and Dursnar.
Yeah, shout out to both of you. Nice people.
Yeah, I meant to just quickly. For people who might be interested, White Mountains is from 1965. And if you Google White Mountains, it's pretty hard to find, even on IMDb. It's more known by its German name, Russian name, which I cannot
pronounce. Bele Gora, I assume, then? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
you're going to have to search for that one if you want to watch it before it comes to the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be one of our most popular ones. Unless the director of
AFIs.
White Mountains pushes it. Maybe not even then.
Yeah, retweets it. Check out this podcast about a movie I made 50 years ago.
And I guess look forward to Pop India Month, which is coming next month. We're going to be discussing mm-hmm. the cinema of India that is big budget productions, not the cool indie stuff that, mm-hmm. that gets praised. The stuff that gets dismissed
Yay.
As being bad.
Exciting.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. And we will have you listen to us again sometime later, maybe.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.